Hello, everyone, and welcome to Module 1 of Advanced Aromatherapy, Therapeutic Application of Essential Oils for Clarity, Health, and Happiness with David Crowe, titled The Nature of Essential Oils. This is your host, Colleen, at the Shift Network. It is exciting to get going today, but first, I do have a few orientation details to share with you. So I invite you to get comfortable. Since some of you may have been on calls with us before and some are new, please allow me a few moments to get everyone on the same page so we ensure everyone has what they need to take best advantage of the course. You should have received a course orientation email the day you registered, which contains a link where you can confirm your email address and ensure you receive future course emails. Throughout the course, you will receive two emails every week directly from the Shift Network, an email before the call that contains the details for the call, and then an email following that will contain the deepening practices to help support you in the integration of the materials. Please locate and bookmark your course homepage, which will contain all of the recordings, the transcripts, and course materials, along with information on several ways to connect to the live calls. The course homepage can be found by following the link provided in any of the emails just mentioned. Also, please note that you will need to click on the title of each week's call or click on the golden open button next to each week's call to access the course recordings and the transcripts. So, for example, for today's Module 1, if you open the Module 1, you will find a number of handouts for today's session. Most additional course materials and bonuses can be found in the supplemental section, which is at the bottom of the course homepage. Lastly, you receive two emails from Maestro Conference, 24 hours and 2 hours prior to each call. They will include your personal PIN number and your phone number for dialing in. Just a bit of information on the platforms we're using here. If you've dialed in by phone or web phone today and you're on Maestro Conference platform, it's the platform that's allowing us to communicate back and forth with each other, and you can be prompted to participate during, for example, question and answer by pressing 1 or by pressing 4 to join a breakout group. As you will learn, breakout groups are a way of conversing directly with each other around a specific topic, which David will provide for us. If at any time you have a technical issue or a question during the call and you're on Maestro, please at that time press 5 on your keypad and I will come along and assist you. We also provide an audio webcast which allows you to interact by typing questions into the message box. Please know that from there you cannot participate in the live breakout group. So if you are using the webcast, you can at that time call in the Maestro conference just before the breakouts. And you can find all that access information on your course homepage. If you have any technical questions or problems while using the webcast, please type them directly into the box and please provide your email address so we can reply by email. If you have joined by webcast and you would prefer to experience the benefits of Maestro in the future, please check out the International Calling, which includes free methods. It's an additional access numbers link in the upper right-hand corner of your home page. If you're new to online learning, we understand this is a lot of information, so if you have any questions or in need of support, please contact our customer support team by visiting our website at support.theshiftnetwork.com. Again, I just wanted to remind everyone that David does share information and material with us for each module, and recommended, please, to have those handouts available if you are on your computer or on your phone. I am so happy to be hosting this advanced aromatherapy course. It's so wonderful to be with all of you and with, most importantly, David Crowe, sharing this wisdom and leading us on this advanced adventure with essential oils. So, David, an enormous welcome to you. From all of us.
Thank you, Colleen. Very nice introduction, and welcome to everybody. all over the world. We are starting another adventure here, a journey of 6 months into a very interesting and complicated topic of aromatherapy and essential oils. I have a few things that I wanted to cover just to get started as well, a few logistics. First, to say thank you and to welcome you and to acknowledge that taking an advanced course is a big investment of your time, your energy, your attention, and your money as well, and I very much appreciate that. So thank you for making this investment, and especially for your interest in this very important aspect of natural medicine. Now, we do have a couple of things that are posted at the bottom of the course page that I wanted to bring your attention to. These are resources that can help you with some parts of this program. One is the actual essential oils, and the other is more information. And so if you scroll down to the bottom of the course page, you will see that there's a section there called Supplemental Materials, and one of the links there at the bottom is a 20% discount from the Floracopia store. Those of you who are not familiar, Floracopia is our little company that my wife Sarah and I own and operate, along with a very dedicated team. And we are offering you an ongoing 20% discount off of everything in our store, since it is specifically related to essential oils and aromatherapy supplies. And that also includes an additional 15% off on the tester kits that we have put together. Now, this is not necessary or mandatory that you have the oils, although it's definitely a lot better to follow along if you do have the essential oils while we are talking about the subject and doing the contemplative aromatherapy practices and talking about their therapeutics and so forth. And there's a lot of practices that will happen every week where you'll receive monographs to study the specific functions of different oils and how to use them and blend them and make them into different types of recipes and what kinds of therapeutic results you can expect. And so it's hard to do that if you don't have the oils. So I recommend that you have the oils, but it's also not necessary or mandatory to get them from Floracopia. As a matter of fact, one of the important subjects that we will be covering next week will be the quality control issues that are out there. And there are many sources of essential oils. And one of the ways that you can learn about the complexities of the essential oil industry that we're going to explore next week is to sample a lot of different oils from different sources. And you will begin to develop, just through your own olfactory abilities, the awareness that there's a lot of differences between even the same species of oil. That's the first resource, and the discount code, I will mention it here, the discount code is aromatherapy20. Very simple to remember, 20% off everything in the store for the discount code of aromatherapy20. And the link to go shopping there is there at the bottom. And you just use that discount code when you check out of the shopping cart. And I know that many people have already gone shopping in preparation for this course, and I would say thank you. I will also mention that relatively soon we are going to have a blending kit available, probably within a week or two. We don't actually need it quite yet. But when we actually get into the process of blending essential oils and making some preparations for specific therapeutic purposes, it would be good to be able to just pick up all the little supplies you need, a few bottles and a few pipettes and a few tester strips and so forth, and we are putting that together and we'll make that available so it's one-stop shopping. If you look further down on the same page, you will see that there's a consultation email. This is a very important resource because many of the things that we're going to be talking about have to do with specific medical concerns that people have. A lot of questions that come during these courses are about health challenges that people are having or things that they would just like to talk to me about personally, about their experience with using this oil or that. And sometimes it's also because we don't have time for all the webcast questions to be covered at the end of each module. And so this is just another resource for you, is a way to contact me personally. And I suggest that you use this email specifically if you have questions that are related to medical and health concerns. The main thing that we want to emphasize with the webcast questions, we want to encourage people to ask questions on the webcast that are relevant for a fairly large group and everybody. And we want to make sure that we don't end up taking time talking about a specific medical condition that you have that may or may not be of interest or relevance to everybody else in the class. Those kind of questions come a lot. As a matter of fact, I know that that's one of the main reasons why many of you are here, is that you are actually looking for some answers to some health challenges. And this is a good place to find it, because this course is very much designed to answer those questions in terms of what oils do you use and how do you use them for specific health concerns. If you have looked through the sales page of the course, you saw that there's a tremendous amount of emphasis on the therapeutic applications of the oils. There's very little emphasis on history or chemistry or any of the more tangential subjects. It's really about therapeutic applications. And with that comes a fair amount of interaction about things that you may need some medical guidance on, some health guidance, some specific information. And that email is the place to do that. And so I invite you to take advantage of that. I have never found, in, you know, almost 2 years of doing these courses now with hundreds and hundreds of people, that people are abusing this. And instead, it becomes a really wonderful opportunity to hear about your progress and the testimonials of how these things are helping you also. All right, that's my little orientation to get us started. Now, I also want to give a secondary orientation about what the course is about. I imagine that many of you took the 7-week Ayurvedic aromatherapy course, which was an introduction to the bigger subject of aromatherapy, looked at through the lens of Ayurveda. And that was a very large course. We had over 600 people, very well attended. And many questions have come about what is the nature of this course in relation to that. And those questions are basically answered in the sales page, where you can see the modules broken down. We are going to follow those modules very clearly week by week. Sometimes we get a little behind, but then we always catch up. And there are probably also people who have not taken, who did not take the Ayurvedic aromatherapy course. And so we have a little bit of a mix in the audience. And so I would say that this first module specifically is a little bit of a review about some of the things that we covered, but it goes deeper. We're going to look even more at the nature of essential oils through the cosmology that we started to look at in the Ayurvedic aromatherapy course, but there's more. And for those who did not take it, it's a general introduction. So that's a little bit of an introduction specifically about module one that we're going to be looking at and the orientation between the two courses. Now, the subject of aromatherapy is very complicated, and I'm glad that we have 6 months to unpack all of this. The first three modules are really going to be dedicated to exploring a lot of the complexities of the aromatherapy world and the essential oil industry, because you can't go very far without running into these glaring issues. So I have come to appreciate the field of aromatherapy as a very, very complicated subject. It's a very complicated aspect of natural medicine. It's very paradoxical, actually. On the one hand, it's very old, meaning that aromatic plants have been used by humans for thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of years. And preparations of various types of aromatic plants go very far back. We have evidence of it being used in 70,000 years ago. Aromatic plants were used. We have documentation of these things being found in various preparations in old Neolithic sites and so forth. At the same time, aromatherapy is very new because what was being done in the past was not distillation of the pure essential oils. Distillation is relatively new, as you will learn today. And furthermore, distillation, as we know it now, is very new. Distillation has a long history going back probably 700 or 800 years, probably not further than that, with essential oils and aromatic plants. Some people try to make a case that it's been around for thousands of years, but that doesn't agree with what the evidence shows. And the information that we have now about essential oils has really just started coming out in the last few decades. So we're really in a completely new field of medicine, a completely new field of herbal medicine. And at the same time, it's very old. It's a very old aspect of botanical medicine. The subject itself of how to use essential oils and aromatherapy is, on the one hand, very simple and widely applicable, easy to integrate into our homes and our home pharmacies, easy to use for a wide range of situations. But on the other hand, because essential oils are so concentrated and they're not biocompatible, which I'll explain in a little bit, it's also extremely complicated. So here's another paradox. Essential oils and aromatherapy are very simple but very complicated. And we also find another paradox, which is that a lot is known, both through traditional medicine, empirical, historical lineages of knowledge, especially in the herbal world about these aromatic plants, and at the same time, a lot is unknown. There is just not much known about how essential oils that have appeared on the market fairly recently interact with all kinds of different physiological mechanisms in the body. All of this is complicated by the fact that there has been an explosion of interest in this subject that has been promoted for good and bad, primarily through marketing. In other words, it has not come through clinical channels. It has not come through training in herbology. It has come through the internet and multi-level marketing. And this is just how it is. This is just the reality of how essential oils came to us in the United States. And that's different than how essential oils came to people in Europe, which was mostly out of agriculture first, and second, through medical herbology. We have received aromatherapy mostly through marketing. And as a result of this, we have another paradox, which is on the one hand that many, many people have been exposed to essential oils, learned about their benefits, and have benefited from it, and this is tremendously positive. On the other hand, because the oils are so concentrated and need such careful use and high level of knowledge for the most part, unfortunately, a lot of people are getting hurt, more than you want to know. This is one of our big subjects for next week, all the adverse reactions that are being reported. And the adverse reactions to essential oils are much more serious and more widespread, more cases reported, by far than cases of people hurting themselves with herbal medicine, taking turmeric or, you know, so forth. These kinds of herbal medicines in general tend to be much less problematic. So that's a brief overview of the complexities we're going to be getting into, and I'm very glad that I get to take you on this tour because I come from a background of clinical practice rather than business, and therefore my primary orientation is making sure that you know how to use these very concentrated herbal extracts safely so you don't hurt yourself, so you don't hurt others. And this is, as you will find out, the main problem when people get told things that are inaccurate. And there is a lot of widespread misinformation that's out there. So I'm very glad that I can give you good, solid information that goes with good, solid education about safety. Now, my personal connection to this very complicated subject comes through my background in clinical medicine, which is Ayurvedic medicine, Chinese medicine, and my background as a licensed acupuncturist and herbalist in clinical practice over 30 years. And I have been very interested in all plant medicine for a long time, and aromatherapy also for many decades, and I have come to appreciate herbal medicine because it connects us to so many very, very important aspects of life. And this is a theme that I am going to be presenting woven into this entire course. So this course is not just about this oil is good for that, because that's a very superficial level. One of my primary goals is to help you understand the interconnectedness between ourselves, physical body, mental health, emotional well-being, and so forth, and the plants. And what we see that's so amazing about aromatherapy and herbal medicine in general, but very specifically with the use of essential oils, we can contact these things directly every time we smell them, is that the oils, the aromatic plants, link us to many global issues. And so therefore, we are connected to the well-being of the plant world, and so we will learn all these different aspects as we go along. You're going to learn some things about botany, and obviously the health of the plants is very, very important, and the health of the plants is very challenged now, and this will be something we can unpack a bit more next week in the quality control class, because one of the most basic things we have to consider is that if we want high-quality herbal medicine and high-quality essential oils, we have to have high-quality plants. And if the ecosystem is suffering, that's going to be reflected in production, and it's going to be reflected in demand, and that equation between availability and demand, and that leads to all kinds of quality control issues. So we are also connected directly to agriculture and to the people who are growing these plants and taking care of them and the sustainability projects and all the challenges that go with that. And one of the primary challenges is climate change. So we are connected to the climate, and we are connected to the plants, and we're connected to the land, and we are also connected through all of this to economics, because all of this comes down to some kind of economic equation to make it work. And economics also is directly related to politics. Of course, we are looking at this subject primarily through the lens of medicine, natural medicine, herbal medicine, but that also opens up the opportunity to explore a lot of science, and there's a lot of research that's coming out now, and we'll be getting into looking at what modern science tells us. So we have not only the traditional information coming from the long history of herbal medicine, but we have tremendous amount of research coming out on an ongoing basis now. And so in that particular way, we're kind of in a golden age of availability of a huge amount of knowledge and information about natural medicine. Much more is available now than ever. We're also going to be connected to the entire subject of chemistry, which we're not going to spend a lot of time on, but there'll be a little bit. But when we're using these essential oils, we're also connected to the history of not just the essential oils, but the aromatic plants. And that also means that we're connected to religion, because the aromatic plants are the primary form of plants that are used in religious traditions and spiritual practices, and that links us to culture. And so therefore, we can see that this is an opportunity then to connect ourselves to a lot of big subjects. And that's why I enjoy teaching it. That's why I enjoy this subject, is it's not just lavender oil can make you feel relaxed. It's really like lavender oil means all these things. It's a great doorway to learn a lot about life and our consciousness and our well-being and our interconnectedness with everything. So I have a few goals that I would like to state here at the beginning of this course. Number one, I would really like to make sure you understand the safe uses of essential oils. That's my primary concern, is I want you to be protected from the fraudulent information, misleading information, disinformation, misinformation that's out there, so that you don't hurt yourself, or even, you know, even worse, you hurt your child, you hurt your friends through telling them things that are not medically correct. And that's a primary goal. Now, once we know how to avoid those problems, then we can enjoy all the health benefits. And that's the other primary goal, and that's why this class is really oriented to therapeutics. Once we start to notice the benefits and we protect ourselves from any adverse reactions, then we can really start to appreciate that this is a wonderful form of natural medicine. And as I just described, it's also a wonderful doorway into developing a much deeper relationship, both physically and mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, with the plants. And as we develop that deeper biological appreciation of the plants, that makes us more sensitive to all kinds of spiritual issues, which we have unpacked in previous courses. I'm going to just use that as a kind of general framework to come back to, because one of my primary goals is to help you to develop a deeper appreciation of plant medicine in general, and to be able to feel the kind of relationship that happens between the plant that's giving its energies, whether it's the five elements that we're going to talk about here in a moment, or whether it's prana and chi, the life force, whatever, the plant is affecting those energies and elements inside of us. And so finally, all of this, in my mind, has a very deeply spiritual dimension to it, because fragrance is so closely linked to consciousness, and fragrance and consciousness are so closely linked to our mental, emotional, psychological well-being, and all of these things have a very ancient history linking back to spiritual and religious lineages. All right, there's a little bit of an overview for you. Our first module today, the nature of essential oils. What we would like to cover is the general theme. Aromatic plants produce essential oils for their own biological purposes. That's what we're now going to study. Yet they have great benefits when we use them for our own health. Now, right there is a simple definition of herbal medicine. Why do plants produce medicinal compounds? They produce them for themselves. We came along and we learned how to extract them. And an amazing thing. Plant physiology, plant immunity, plant genetics, plant anatomy and structure and form and function are so closely related to human physiology and anatomy that the compounds that the plants produce for themselves frequently can be used for parallel problems in the human body. Now, that's an opening statement. That's what this module is all about. By understanding the cosmological elements and energies that are concentrated in the plants, we can learn to safely use their oils for corresponding purposes in the human body. So again, that's a definition of herbal medicine, using the compounds that the plants produce for themselves for our parallel purposes. Main points that we will cover today: why plants produce essential oils and what that means to human health. We'll touch on extracting and distilling methods. Essential oils as prana and chi, the life force of plants and its relationship to healing. So we're going to touch on a bit of Ayurvedic and Chinese medical terminology. Solar and lunar energies of essential oils and their therapeutic applications. This is something that I will be coming back to all the time. I prefer to view the oils as manifestations of celestial and terrestrial energies and elements that relate to those energies and elements inside the human body, as opposed to breaking them down in a more reductionistic scientific way into compounds. This compound does this. Well, it's true. this compound does that, but an essential oil is not one compound. An essential oil is a very complex mixture of many, many compounds produced by a living plant, which means that some kind of very ancient intelligence went into it. Ancient intelligence is a strong theme in all of my orientation to herbal medicine. What we are dealing with is not only using the compounds that the plants used for, created for themselves for our own benefits, they created those compounds according to a very ancient intelligence. Even a relatively new plant, such as rose, goes back 30 million years. And so that's a lot of intelligence in rose oil. And therefore, when we are using herbal medicine, whatever form it is, we should always be aware and sensitive to the fact that what we are treating inside ourselves is supporting the ancient intelligence inside of us that goes back a long ways as well. And if it is disordered, we are trying to correct it using the ancient intelligence from the plants. This is a big theme that we're going to touch on over and over again in the therapeutic aspects of the use of oils. The next point that we're going to cover here, essential oils and the five elements according to Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine. This is, again, an introduction and a review and how to set the stage so that we can have a language throughout this next 6 months. And then we're going to talk about how to directly perceive the energies, elements, and therapeutic properties of the oils. And this is how we make this directly experiential to our own senses, otherwise known as organoleptic. Now, if you would look at the course page, you will see that there's a number of files. Let's take a moment and go through and just open all these files, and we can now start on our little journey. Why don't we first open the file? If you do not have it open already, let's take a look at the file called Essential Oil List. Now, this is prepared because one of the first questions that I can always anticipate in doing a program like this is, what oils should I have? Well, here they are. Now, this is only a partial list of some of the major oils, and this list shows you several things. First of all, if there is a star next to it, it means that it is in the tester kit that we are offering. I believe there's 12 oils in the tester kit. And this is broken down into two sections. These are from Floracopia, and so we offer them in half-ounce bottles or drams. And we'll see the common name, black pepper. You'll see the Latin botanical name, Piper nigrum, and you will see the origin, Madagascar. This is the oil list. This is just for your reference. And as we go through, this list will become helpful not just in terms of thinking about what you might want to have in your collection, but also to become familiar with where the oils come from and their Latin names. All right. The next thing that we would like to open up here is the PDF slideshow. And I know that people who were in the Ayurvedic aromatherapy course really appreciated having some visual images. And so we're going to start our class now exploring the nature of essential oils by actually looking at the elements that go into them. So please, if you would open that file, you will see that it's a PDF. I think that that should be relatively accessible to everybody, and I think that we probably all have that open by now. And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to just go through slide by slide, and I'm going to link this to the lecture that I am talking about that is now going to start exploring the first point. The first topic here of our module is why plants produce essential oils and what that means to human
health. Excuse me, David, if I can interrupt. Could you just give us the name of the file you're looking at one more time, please?
Yes, that's the Botany of Essential Oils.
Thank you.
That's the PDF, Botany of Essential Oils. Is anybody sending a distress message to the webcast here?
I'm just preparing, because it's a PDF and a slideshow and you are going to be teaching it, that I just wanted to
right.
make sure that they had it. Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, feel free to interrupt me again if anybody is sending a message that they are having some difficulty with this. But generally after the first week and after the first time around with being on the course page and opening the files, it becomes a very simple routine for everybody. Now, normally, most of the files are just going to be Word documents with text. But this week, we have these slideshows. So let's go ahead and proceed. And this first slide is an image of the cosmos. And I put this in here because this is the basic orientation that I like to start with, is what is inside a plant? What is inside the essential oil that is concentrated from the plant? And that gives us a very good way to understand how the energies and elements in a plant relate to the human body. So this little discussion here is why plants produce essential oils, how they do it, and what they do it with. We're going to cover those three aspects: why they produce essential oils, how they do it, and what they do it with. And so this will give us good material to get oriented with some basic ideas that we're going to unpack further. Okay, so first of all, this is the what. Okay, what's in the plant? Well, all of these different cosmological energies are in the plant because we come to the most fundamental force that's in plants, and that's sunlight. And our sun is our local star. And so therefore, when we start and look at what's in herbal medicine, well, it's the creative energy of the fire element. And this is particularly important to understand about essential oils, because many essential oils are extremely concentrated in fire element. They can burn the skin badly. They can burn the gastric mucosa. They can burn the mouth and the tongue, the esophagus. They can burn us. They're very, very concentrated solar energy. Now, if you go to the second image here, what we're really talking about is that we can see that there's two major influences. Three major influences are on slide number two, and that is the influences of the earth, the influences of the sun, the influences of the moon. And actually, you can also see in this image that it's the influence of the water element and the influence of the air element, and that pretty much sums it up. What is in the plant? All of those elements right there. It's just that the plant is concentrating all those elements very specifically. Here, if you go to slide number three, you'll see the two primary celestial influences on plants, sun and moon. And if you go to slide number four, let's pause here for a minute. This is the primary influence on all plants, and that is the sunlight. Sunlight drives the photosynthesis in the plant, and that is what causes all of the various transformations at the molecular level. And so therefore, one of the first things we can say in doing this little exercise of what's in a bottle of essential oils is we can say that there is sunlight in that bottle of essential oil. That means it is fire element, because that is the basis of photosynthesis, the basis of plant life. So this is one of the most important things to consider. And when it comes to human physiology, we ask the question, well, what's the relationship between fire element from the sun and the human body? Well, that is the link to all of the different ways that we use oils to either cool the excess heat of inflammation or to bring a kind of warming, stimulating influence to the body. So this is the presence of sunlight. Now, the sunlight is what drives photosynthesis, and if you go to slide number five, you can basically see an image here of how sunlight is absorbed into the biosphere. And if you go to image number six, you can see that sunlight comes to the earth and it is gathered using the green hands of the plants, okay? And we are completely dependent on leaves. Why are we dependent? Because we can't eat our sunlight directly. We also can't just eat dirt. We are dependent on the plants to extract the nutrients from the soil that we can consume in a bioavailable way to us, and we are dependent on the plants to convert the solar energy into the nutritional foundation of the food chain that we then liberate through our own metabolism, which just happens to be the mere image of photosynthesis. So this is the role of sunlight, and this is the beginning of the production of essential oils. You can see that it's the leaves that produce it. If you go to slide number 7 here, you can see the chloroplasts in the leaves, and this is where life starts, where higher life starts, because all higher life is dependent on photosynthesis. All higher life is dependent on this particular type of cell with this collection of pigments doing these particular enzymatic processes, converting solar energy to chemical energy. That's what you see there in slide number 7. That's the most important element that is in herbal medicine, is sunlight. Now, if you go to slide number 8, you'll see the next most important energy that's in medicinal plants, and that's the influence of the moon. And you can also see that in slide number 9 and slide number 10. And the moon plays a very, very important role in the life of plants. It regulates their biorhythms in many ways, and has a strong influence, especially in the tropics, on the water element. And so here we have a polarity, and we explored this a bit in the Ayurvedic aromatherapy course, but the basic polarity, as described by Chinese medicine, is yin and yang. And so sunlight is yang, and moonlight is yin. Sunlight is hot and dry, yang. Moonlight is cool and moist, yin. And in Ayurvedic terminology, we say sunlight is agni, yang, hot and dry. Moonlight is soma, cool and moist, yin. Now, these terms will become very familiar as we go, the concepts, and so what do we have then in an essential oil? We have both sun and moon, which means that we have some kind of balance. Sometimes it's very yin. It's very moist. It's very cooling. It's very anti-inflammatory. Sometimes it's very yang. It's very hot. It's very spicy. It has high dermotoxic potential to burn the skin. This is how we start to learn about the plants at a holistic elemental level and what they do in the human body. So let's move on here. What happens next? Slide 11. We now start to see another primary influence, which is the influence of the seasons. And the seasons play a very big role in the production of the aromatic compounds that are in the aromatic plants. And so therefore we see that certain seasons, certain plants concentrate certain essential oils in certain parts of their bodies in higher or lower levels. And this is something that we can unpack one oil at a time, because when you learn, for example, that this particular oil is very, very hot and spicy and can burn the skin, and that it has stimulant properties that increase metabolic heat and circulation, many times you can also see that these oils are produced at a maximum time in the summer in a really hot climate. Well, there you go. You have a really nice kind of energetic and elemental explanation, so we can start to feel how nature is in the oils. So we have some examples here. We have springtime, which is when a lot of the flower oils come. We have the fall, which is when many other types of oils come. Certain plants are harvested purely according to a seasonal cycle. Not all, but most plants are harvested according to the peak concentration time, according to the season. And this is because a distiller does not want to spend a lot of time harvesting a lot of plants and get a very low yield. Plants have these biorhythms that produce the essential oils in higher concentrations at certain times of year, and therefore every species is harvested generally with that in mind. All right, let's keep on going, and we can see, well, okay, here's lavender. So that's basically, this is a picture from Canada, and the lavender is blooming, and it's probably sometime in late June, early July. And so the seasonal influences are also in the oils. This is the main concept, is that all of these influences, sun, moon, and seasons, all end up in the bottle, and those are the true energies and elements that are affecting us. If we go to slide number 14, now we start to see the elements. And so here's an image of water. What else is in there? Well, obviously, if we use the system of the Ayurvedic terminology, we have earth, water, fire, air, space. Earth, water, fire, air, space. I like that system because it's very easy to intuitively feel these when we start doing the contemplative aromatherapy practices. So we can feel that there's the presence of fire. Why? Because it feels spicy in the sinuses. We can feel that there's a presence of high concentration of air. Why? Because this particular eucalyptus oil opens the sinus passageways and we can breathe more clearly. This is a very strong theme throughout this course. How do we know what the oils do? We learn how to feel them. Well, you will also have intellectual academic information, but let's also become very sensitive. So we can just smell an oil and we'll have a general sense of, is it more hot or is it more cold? Heating, cooling, stimulating, relaxing, sympathetic, parasympathetic, and so forth. Let's take a look then at slide 15, and we can also see that water or lack of water actually plays a really big role in the essential oils. And of course, this is one of the reasons that herbal medicine is connected to the health of the biosphere, is that the biosphere is disordered, becoming increasingly disordered, and this is affecting the production of medicinal plants. Now, in some cases, the dryness will actually increase the benefits. If you look at the next slide, slide 16, you'll see a really good example of this, and that is something very interesting, and that is that the aromatic plants tend to produce higher levels of essential oil compounds under drier conditions. Here's an interesting statistic for you. What percentage of the plant world, what percentage of plants produce essential oils? What percentage are aromatic? Well, it turns out that it's only about 10%, and these plants have some very unique characteristics. And so this is a frankincense tree in Somaliland, and you can see that it's very dry. There's not a lot of rain. As a matter of fact, these trees don't even have roots. They attach themselves directly to the rocks. Frankincense is a big subject in this course because it is so versatile. We're going to see it in many modules. So some plants, as the climate gets hotter and drier, will actually be producing more essential oils because that's part of their immune system. So there, I gave away the next part of the slideshow. Why? Okay, so if we look at the next slide, slide 17, we see that there's also earth element, and that's because the plants are absorbing nutrients from the soil, and those nutrients are also the compounds that go into producing the essential oils. And so now you should have a really good overview, and if you look at slide 18, you'll see another picture of the earth element. So what you can sum up now is that an essential oil is basically produced by photosynthesis driven by sunlight, influenced by the moon, that is absorbing the elements of the environment from wherever it is growing, and that includes rain or lack of rain, and that includes nutrients from the soil. And those nutrients from the soil are being built up into the aromatic compounds while the plant is breathing. It's inhaling carbon dioxide and exhaling oxygen, the opposite of our metabolism. Now, if we go to the next slide, this is basically an image from Corsica, one of our favorite places that produces tremendous aromatic plants and essential oils. And many species that are very common around the world have been found to be very unique if they come from the island of Corsica. And why is that? Well, it's because there's a unique kind of ecosystem where, first of all, it's very clean, and it's got a particular weather pattern, and the soil is a particular kind of chemistry. And so many of the aromatic plants that grow on Corsica, they're the same species as you find in other parts of Europe. You find them just, you know, a few hundred miles away on the mainland, but their chemistry is totally different. Now, this is something that we will touch on as we learn about the oils, and these are the ecotypes of the oils and how all of these influences actually translate into their therapeutic applications. If you go to slide number 20, you're going to see the air element. This is the apertures on the leaves that produce, they're actually the mouth that inhales and exhales, and the leaves are covered with these openings that open and close, and this is where the gaseous exchange happens. So this is the air element. And so, as I mentioned, essential oils are composed of sunlight, moonlight, five elements, and that includes the fact that the plant is breathing. And so now you can visualize how the plant breathes. The leaves are covered with these microscopic openings that open to inhale carbon dioxide and exhale oxygen. Now, if we go to the next slide, number 21, we come to the question now. Now we have covered the first part, which is what do they create the oils from? All right, you'll remember that I'm covering three topics here: why plants produce essential oils, how they do it, and what they do it with. And so now, what they do it with: sunlight, moonlight, earth, water, fire, air, space, all of these elements moving through the channels of space inside the body. Now the question comes, why? Why do these particular plants, this 10% of the plant world, why do these aromatic plants produce these aromatic compounds? And the answer is that aromatic molecules are in the category of what is called secondary metabolic compounds. Secondary metabolic compounds are opposed to primary metabolic compounds. Primary metabolic compounds are those compounds that the plant produces that are essential for its basic physiological functions. And secondary are also essential, but they are byproducts of primary metabolic compounds, and they are produced for a whole range of different functions. And the major functions that the aromatic molecules have, and this is directly related to why they're good for us, number one, primarily they are immunological in nature. In other words, all the essential oils are produced by the aromatic plants as part of its immune system. In many cases, it's the primary part of the immune system. Now, just think about that. We're going to extract these molecules. These molecules were created from the nutrients from the earth. The plant was drinking water. It was breathing. It was being driven by photosynthesis from the sun, influenced by lunar energies. And then you have a molecule. And that molecule, then, is the physical form of its immune power. Now, many plants, all plants produce secondary metabolites for different kinds of immune functions. And if you look at the next slide, number 22, you can see why. Because plants are always being attacked by all sorts of different things. And this is another big answer to the question, what is herbal medicine? Herbal medicine, as I have given you the first definition, is using the compounds that plants produce for themselves for our own purposes. But many, many herbal medicines are based on the immune compounds. Essential oils are one family of immune compounds produced by the plants. But there's also alkaloids that are produced. For example, berberine, caffeine, cocaine, any of the alkaloids that have a role in plant metabolism at the immune level is undoubtedly going to have some strong effect on the human body as well. So this is the answer to why. Why does the plant produce essential oils? Number one reason is to protect itself. And then we come along and we distill the plant, and there we have in the bottle what? the compounds that the plant produced for its immune system. So we can say that essential oils are literally the distilled immune system of the plant. Well, that means something to us. Let's go ahead and look at the next slide, number 23. Okay, here's a little weevil. And this is why, again, plants produce essential oils and other things. And viruses, if you go to number 24, it just so happens that the plants produce compounds to protect themselves against a wide range of pathogens, and isn't it fortunate that the compounds they produce for themselves protect us from a very similar range of pathogens as well, very similar species. Let's go ahead and look at the next slide here, and we're talking about a mint plant, and let's just look at why do we have a mint plant in this particular slideshow? Well, that's again to illustrate that the aromatic plants have an immune system, and if you look at number 26, it explains the mystery of slide number 25. The reason we know that aromatic immunity is a highly successful adaptive mechanism is, as you can see in slide number 26, aromatic plants have been around a very long time. This particular slide, for example, I believe is actually a leaf of a birch tree. This is like from millions and millions of years ago. All right. And so now we have to put this into context and look at what's happening to the human immune system right now. And specifically in the last 100 years, we have developed antibiotics, and scientists are saying that if we wanted to find a way to mutate the global ecology of bacteria and accelerate its evolution to become more virulent and pathogenic, we could not have found a better way to do it than dosing the population with antibiotics. In other words, we have all kinds of antibiotic-resistant bacteria coming out. So basically, in 100 years, we have basically made nature highly aggressive at the bacterial level against us. And yet we have these plants that have been all around us now, millions and millions of years. And therefore, when we are using essential oils, and we're not just using the sun and the moon and the earth and the water and the fire and the air, we are also using an immunological intelligence that is very, very old. And that's what that picture is for. All right, the next major reason is not just for protection. That's a major benefit for us, a major primary reason we're going to see over and over again, the antimicrobial powers attacking, the immune-boosting powers boosting all of these aspects of health and benefits for us. But there's another aspect of why aromatic plants produce essential oils, and that's to attract. That's what you see in slide number 27. Why do plants produce aromatic molecules to attract? Well, that's because, especially with the flowers, they're attracting pollinators. And so if you go to slide number 28, you can see a beautiful photo that Sarah took in Corsica of the helichrysum flower with a pollinator. And so therefore, when we come to the flowers, we're going to learn that the flower essential oils not only have very strong immune-protecting functions, but they also have very strong attractant functions, and that's basically what perfumery is. Okay, let's look at slide number 29, and here what you see is pollen. That's an image of pollen, and that's why the aromatic plants produced attractant molecules is to get the pollen spread around. Now, if you look at image number 30, what you see here is the actual source of the essential oil molecules. Now, this image is particularly interesting, and the next image as well, number 31 and 32. These three images are electron scanning microscope images. And actually, on slide 30, if you look to the center lower, you can actually see the mouth that is inhaling and exhaling. And the term is escaping me at the moment. Stomata, I believe, is what it's called. So these open and close, but what is interesting here is that you see the glands. So these little spaceship-shaped objects, these are essential oil glands. The essential oil molecules are formed, metabolized, and produced inside these glands and then stored inside them. And the reason that they are stored inside them is that the essential oils can actually burn the plant. And so therefore, the plant generally doesn't release the essential oils unless it has a specific purpose to do so. And that purpose is something that we can explore. Why does the plant release certain fragrances at certain times? This is especially important in the biorhythm of the flowers. So these three are different species of aromatic plants. The same here with number 31. And here you can see a lot of the stomata here, the breathing mechanisms of the leaves. And the same with slide number 32. You can see that this is where the essential oils come from. And so what happens then in the distillation process is that the plant material goes into the still, which I'll show you the next slide show about in just a moment. And these essential oil glands break open and release the essential oils out of them into the steam that's passing through it. Now we come to slide number 33. And what is this particular slide? This is one of the candidates considered by paleobotanists to be one of the earliest flowers, Amborella. It's still around, actually. It's growing on the island of New Caledonia, which is off the east coast of Australia. And Amborella traces back to approximately 140 million years ago, which is when they believe the first flower appeared. And therefore, again, I want to stress that the flower oils and plant oils have a very old, old history. And let's take a look at the next slide to put this into context. The lotus. This is also one of the candidates for one of the first flowers. So it's an interesting thing to study, and we're going to review this when we come to many of the floral oils, is that for a long, long time, hundreds and hundreds of millions of years, there were plants, but there were no flowers. And then suddenly there was a flower. And then in a very short period of time, the world was taken over by flowering plants. And they actually changed the entire biosphere. And that's a very interesting subject. It's not our primary topic today, but I just wanted to mention that this does also play a very big role in what's in the bottle. If you go to the next slide, you can see a rosebud. And if you go to the next slide, you will see a graph of the biorhythm of how a flower emits its aromatic molecules. Okay, so most people know that flowers open and close on a biorhythmic basis. A lot of people don't know that the biorhythm doesn't follow the sun directly. Some flowers open in the morning and then close at night. Some flowers open at night and then close when the sun comes out. The biorhythm of the aromatic molecules that are secreted into the surrounding atmosphere follow the opening and closing of the flower. And so here, we have another definition now of what's in the bottle. We have another component, and that is that it's signaling. It's a signaling mechanism. It's a kind of reproductive intelligence. Now, why is that important to us as we go through these therapeutic modules? It's because there are so many flower oils that have such a direct effect on our biorhythms. So we will unpack how the biorhythms of the flowers actually influence our limbic system, which is a major aspect of what controls our biorhythms. What's a good example? Floral oils help us to get better sleep. That's a biorhythm problem. Insomnia is a biorhythm problem. So what we can see then is that we are also inhaling the actual biorhythms that produce the oils. And there's many fascinating examples of flowers that produce essential oils at a certain time of day, and the oil has a specific relevance to that time of day. For example, the orange blossom, neroli oil, harvested at midday, it's full of sunlight. When we breathe it, it has an energizing kind of uplifting effect on our mood and our mental consciousness. All right, let's take a look at the next slide because we have so many slideshows to go through. And this is the jasmine, same basic concept, biorhythm. And this is the last in this series. One of the things that I like to say about the flower oils is that what's in the bottle is distilled impermanence. And that's because there is a biorhythm that is captured at a very specific time. So this flower, night blooming jasmine, when do you think it blooms? It blooms exactly between 11 o'clock at night and 2 in the morning. Well, it happens that the flowers are open most of the day, but that's when the maximum production time comes. Now, most people are not out harvesting the flowers at night. They get them very early, you know, in the dawn. But that's when the most oil is produced. Okay, so after that, what happens? Well, it disappears. So in other words, that oil comes and goes. It's like a pulsation. It's a floral pulsation. And it travels into the atmosphere in what's called the diffusivity range. And so the jasmine flowers, one jasmine flower has a diffusivity range of approximately 10 feet. In other words, people and insects and creatures can smell the aromatic molecules emanating about 10 feet away from the flower. And every flower has a different diffusivity range and a different biorhythm. And these are molecules that are created on a pulsation basis. Therefore, we can say that biorhythms are also in the oils, especially the flower oils. And we can say that flower oils are basically distilled impermanence. It's a captured moment in time. Now, if we go to the last slide here, slide number 38, we'll see the exact opposite. This is the bristlecone pine forest. It's one of the oldest species of trees. These bristlecone pines have been around for over 4,000 years. This might be actually the oldest tree in the world. And what you can see then is that this represents the exact opposite of impermanence, okay? This represents distilled time. If you were to distill the oil from a bristlecone pine or from any of the old trees, for example, sandalwood generally comes from old trees, frankincense from old trees. There are many oils that come from trees that are hundreds of years old, and so what do we say then? Is it distilled impermanence of just a few, an hour or two in time? No, it's actually the accumulated time of centuries. That's also in the oil. All right, that now ends our little presentation about what's in the oil, and I hope you found that enjoyable. And what does this mean to our human health? Well, because there are parallels anatomically and physiologically between humans and plants, it means that all of those things that the plant produced for itself have some relevance to us, whether it's accumulated time of old trees, which are generally in the category of the sacred sense, things that we burn in ceremonies and rituals that give us some influence spiritually in our consciousness, or whether it's the impermanent pulsation of the flowers, which has an intoxicating euphoric effect on our moods and emotions and helps us feel aphrodisiac intoxication, whatever it is, whether it's the sunlight or the moonlight or the elements, five elements, all of these things are in the oils in different concentrations. All right, let's open another file, a couple of files actually. First, if you open the document called distillation, this is for your reading enjoyment, and this basically outlines in some detail what we will now see in the next slideshow. Mostly in the slideshow, what we're going to be seeing is steam distillation, which is down at the bottom, steam distillation. The most common distillation method for producing most essential oils, it's the preferred method for oils with a high boiling range, and that's mostly what we're going to see here in the next slideshow. But this file also has some descriptions of other methods of how the plants are prepared. So that's just for your reading enjoyment. And now let's open the slideshow called distillation. So again, I'll give a few moments here. Open this PDF. Yes?
I just, there have been a couple inquiries, so I just wanted to make sure everyone really did know where to find that file. I'll just repeat it. So it's the course homepage. You can access from any of the emails you were sent. And from the course homepage, you go into the Module 1, the Nature of Essential Oils, and open it. There's a little toggle button, and when you press open, it will open it. And in there is a list of the class materials for our class this evening. At the bottom are two files. The one that David is referring to is distillation. It's a slideshow, so it is only in the PDF format and not in the Word format. So if you have downloaded everything in Word, it would not include that one file. You actually can just click on it and view it just directly like that, instead of downloading it for the moment. Okay, back to you, David. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Colleen, for your assistance on this. And don't forget that the audio recording of every module is available to listen to afterwards, and the transcripts are there as well. The modules go fairly quickly with a lot of information, and I generally give a lot of files, and I encourage everybody to follow as best as possible, but don't worry about it if you don't catch everything first time around, because you can go through a second time and a third time as well, and you can spend more time with the slideshows and read through the notes and so forth. Many of the notes that I upload are actually homework assignments for you to enjoy afterwards. All right, so here we are in the PDF titled Distillation, and this is a brief overview of what you're going to find in modern aromatherapy essential oil production. And so this is, these are photos that Sarah and I have taken. Mostly she takes the photos and the videos as we travel around. We're in Corsica, slide number one. We are at one of the distiller's properties, one of our favorites, and this is a beautiful property on the east side of Corsica, and against the base of the mountains there, and they have beautiful gardens, and they grow a lot of their crops there, and they also contract out with harvesters to wild harvest a lot of the plants. But here, what I wanted to show you is what a modern distillery looks like. The still is that main object that's sitting right in front of us on the right-hand side. And what is important to understand about this image is that these modern industrial-sized stills are actually two stories high. So we are standing on the second story, and what we are looking at is the top of the still. And the still itself is the shorter, wider tank, and its lid is down. If you look at the left-hand side, you will see a second still with its lid up. And when the lid is down, as it is on the right-hand side, you can also see where the steam is. This is the condensing unit. The steam comes out through the top, and then it falls down below. Now, let's follow this so we get a better appreciation for how large this thing is. And all of this is totally mechanized, because you know they don't do this by hand, because they're talking about huge volumes of plant material. One distillation is typically 1 ton of plant material. So let's look at slide number two. Now we're at a different distillery. This is in Provence, in the mainland of France, and again we're on the second story. Now the second story is generally where the plants are unloaded from the trucks. So this is where they go in, and here is a distiller, and he is now on the ground floor. This is William from Provence, and he is showing us how the steam rises out of the plant material and comes down through the condensing tube into the separating vessel. Now, I don't worry about understanding this quite yet. I'll explain it step by step. And so first, the plant material is loaded. All right, so this is a distillation of eucalyptus. This is in a different distillery in the north side of Corsica. And so the plant material is generally lifted in and out using cranes and pulleys and so forth, because it's too much work otherwise. Here's a smaller distillery, but again, what you see is the ground floor. You see the tanks, and then you can see this little stairway going up along the back there, and people load the plant material, lifting it onto that second level there. And so this is a very interesting gentleman by the name of Michel, who has a very deep spiritual relationship with the plants, and he's the distiller of several of our essential oils from Corsica. Now we are looking at the separation process. So basically, just to describe, if you go to slide number 6, what happens is that the plant material is put into the large tank. Steam is pumped through the bottom of the tank. The steam rises through the plant material, and it comes out through the top into the condensing tube, and it condenses back into water, aromatic water, which then flows into a separator. And so this is actually the steam that has condensed from that tank that's right behind me there, that's being cooked. So the steam is being produced at the bottom of the tank, passing through the plant material, rising upward through the top of the still, and coming back down as aromatic water into this particular type of separator. Now, the separator is what pulls the oil and the water apart. Now, it's not technically what pulls it apart. It's what takes advantage of the natural separation that happens anyway. So here's an interesting thing, is that aromatic molecules are lighter than water. They have an affinity to air. They like to disperse. They like to evaporate. They don't like water. They want to get away from the water. So when the essential oil glands break apart in the distillation process, the essential oils come out and are carried away in the steam. They're very light molecules. They float away in the steam, then they condense and they come back down as aromatic water. And then the molecules start to find each other in the condensed water, and they bond together into little micro droplets that meet other micro droplets, and they become droplets that then rise to the top. Now, this little alchemy is intriguing because it tells us that essential oils basically have an affinity to air and space. They want to rise. They want to evaporate. Well, air and space are the primary elements that are involved in the application of these compounds that are extracted from plants applied for therapeutic purposes. In other words, aromatherapy has primarily an affinity to air and space elements. And you can see this at the very beginning of the distillation process. So aroma therapy, meaning therapeutic benefits derived from aromas, means that the majority of it is linked to our breathing, air, inhalation, atmosphere, and space, sinus cavities, thoracic cavity, respiratory space of the lungs, okay? So we can start to see all of these elemental alchemical parallels as we look at the distillation process. So basically what happens here is that the oil sits in the separator and it rises to the top, and then it's scooped out or it overflows to the next level, and that allows the distiller to basically pull off a lot of essential oil that has come to the top. Okay, so here's a small-scale still. Here's our friend Steffi in Corsica, who is demonstrating a smaller distillation unit. And now I'm going to take you on a quick tour around the world. What I just showed you is pretty high-end industrial-level distillation equipment. But here we have something that's very important to consider, and that is that a lot of essential oils are produced using very low-budget, very cost-effective equipment. And this is important because essential oil production is a major source of income in many parts of the world that don't have other types of commodities to produce. Okay, so here we're in South Africa, and South Africa has developed a very large essential oil industry. This is probably eucalyptus, I believe. And so here you can see the putting in place of the top of the still. And what you see then is the condensing tube. So the heat is applied underneath, the water comes out through the bottom, the steam is formed, it rises through the plant material, it boils upward, it passes into the condensing tube, and then it passes out. Okay, so this is a distillation. If you look at the next slide, slide number 11, you can see the loading of the plant material. And of course, every distiller will weigh the plant material to know exactly how much plant material goes in, because they want to see how much essential oil comes out, because that's basically what determines whether your operation is going to be profitable or not, is how much plant material do you have and how much oil do you get and what is that oil worth. So this is Palmarosa grass, and you see that it's dried, okay? And many plants have to be prepared in certain ways before they actually go into the still. And in some cases, many cases actually, the plants need to be dried somewhat, or they need to actually be fermented, or they need to be ground up. So there's an entire process that goes in that. This is important also to link back to our discussion of what's in the bottle, because it's not just the sun and the moon and the earth and the water and the ancient intelligence and the biorhythms. It's also all the human labor, and it's also the influence of the distillation. And we see some specific examples. One of them is the influence of heat inside the still sometimes produces some specific compounds that aren't in the plants. For example, the chamomile oil is very rich in a compound called chamazoline. We will study this when we get to chamomile. It's highly anti-inflammatory, and yet what's interesting, it's a blue molecule. It makes the essential oil of chamomile blue, and yet the flower is white. So where did that come from? It came from a process chemically inside the still where certain molecules were formed as a result of the heat. So sometimes a distillation process creates molecules that have benefit. It's curious that the molecule formed by heat is blue and has a cooling effect on the body. This is an alchemical kind of way of looking at things. Now, the distillation process also breaks down many molecules, and this is important to remember when it comes to quality control. All right, let's continue on here at slide number 12. You have a nice image of what it looks like after the plant material is taken out when the distillation is done. And here is small-scale distillation. If you go to slide number 13, this is the size of still that our good friend Dante Bolcato in Ecuador uses to distill the Palo Santo oil. And he just puts 10 kilos of Palo Santo powder, ground up wood, into this small still. Now he has two of them, and they just run all day long, and he gets a tremendous amount of oil from a small still. Now, this is how a lot of oils are produced, actually, not just big industrial scale, but many of the oils that we really like to get and that we're connected to come from artisan producers, and they don't have the resources for these gigantic stills, and they do it small scale. It's very labor intensive. You get just a little bit of oil. This size still, for example, is very similar to the size that I have also, that Sarah and I have done distillation with. You can fill that thing up over and over and over and over and over before you're going to end up with even a quarter of a liter of oil. And this is a big lesson that a lot of people don't know, is that there's so much plant material and so much labor that goes into producing an essential oil. People don't understand the value of the oils. We'll talk about that next week in the quality control discussion, because in order to get a real oil, you've got to have a lot of plant material that costs a lot to produce, and you've got to have a lot of labor. And especially for the artisan producer, that oil is really valuable. And so when we talk about quality control, one of the main things I'm going to tell you is, if you're looking at the retail shelf and all the oils are $5, that's not the real thing. Okay, so if you go to slide number 15, same distiller, actually, as the last slide, but this is his larger operation, and so here what you can see. This is in Fiji, and you can see the fireplace on the right-hand side. You can see the fire cooking the plant material, and you can see the condensing tube. I'm not totally clear on how this particular setup works, but I think that's basically what we have here. All right, let's continue on. Small-scale distillation. I always like to show this particular image. This is a farm in New Zealand, and we used to get a really nice handmade small-scale tea tree, but this distiller became so well known in the area because their tea tree was really high quality and they were using it in preparations for mastitis for milk cows. And there's so many dairy farmers there in their region that they couldn't produce enough tea tree oil to meet the market, and so they stopped shipping it to us. So this just shows, again, you know, a small-scale operation with the fire underneath. And I believe the way that this works is that it's producing steam that's pumped into the tank that he's digging around in. And you can see the tea tree branches there. Okay, this is a small-scale separator, basically. This is the water, aromatic water coming out, if you look at slide 17. And slide 18, same thing. This is conifer oil in Canada rising to the top. And you can see the micro droplets in the aromatic water coming together. And here we have a fairly large scale, still, if you look at slide number 19. This is the distillation of cedar wood in India. And it's interesting to look at every individual oil and where it comes from, because there's so many stories. Well, cedar wood is distilled from sawdust that is the waste product of making furniture. So it's a secondary, it's a secondary byproduct of another industry that is able to get some added value. If you look at slide number 20, you might see the gentleman down in the shade on the left-hand side there getting ready to stoke the fire under this still in India. You can see the dry grass that has come out, and it's it pulled out of the still after distillation. This is probably lemongrass or something like that that has been distilled, and then once the grass is distilled, then they pull it out and they lay it around to dry, and then they use that as a fuel. Now, if you continue on, you'll see stills of vetiver roots being distilled here in slide 21, and more stills in India, slide number 22. Slide number 23, more. It's, you know, basically the same type of thing. Here you can, if you go to 24, what you see is the collecting vessel is on the right-hand side, the still itself, the tank that holds the plant materials on the left. This is distillation of sandalwood, I believe, the sandalwood distillery. If you go to slide number 25, I like this image. This is from Iran, where rose oil is produced. Unfortunately, we can't get any right now, mostly for political reasons. And maybe things will improve and we will be able to go back to the old days when Iran was a major producer of rose oil. It still is, but mostly now rose oil comes from Bulgaria. So small scale, this is in somebody's backyard, actually, small scale rose distillation. Same with slide number 26, the same place. And here, just to move through this quickly so that we can go on to our next topic, just a quick series of images, 27, small scale distillation of unique aromatics from the Amazon. 28 is small scale distillation of agarwood oil in Thailand. Here you can see how little oil comes out. If you look at slide number 29, that's the agarwood oil on the top. This is the most expensive, most valuable oil in the world. It is impossible to get high-quality agarwood oil for less than $10,000 to $20,000 a liter. It's frequently a lot more than that. So this is a good example of a high-quality aromatic crop that's worth a lot of money, supports a lot of people at the agricultural level. Moving on, we can see agarwood distillation, slide 30. This is in Sikkim, where there's a lot of replanting of the agarwood trees, and that is another thing to consider with everything we're doing in this course. How are we supporting sustainable agriculture? Well, most of the essential oils are actually produced in a very sustainable way organically, at least the ones we're involved with. And agarwood is a success story, and so is sandalwood in many ways. Agroforestry, replanting the trees, high-value crops. Let's look at number 31. Okay, you can see the two layers here. What's interesting about this, this is lemon balm in France, and this is actually a mobile still. And this is a concept that I've seen in many parts of the world, because if you have a mobile still, you can travel around and you can distill the plants right there on the farm at exactly the right time, and the farmer doesn't have to buy a still. They can just rent your still to produce their oils. That's lemon balm, which we're going to be studying. Slide number 32, production of sandalwood in India. Slide 33, production of sandalwood in India. And here we have tuberose, and this is now going into another one of the extracting methods that I'll mention here briefly. We're going to talk about this further. There's some more discussion about it, but there's also different kinds of extracting methods other than steam distillation. This is solvent extraction. There are different types of solvents. Some are food grade, like organic alcohol. Some are toxic, like hexane. There's different types of hexane. There are some that are considered food grade hexane, actually. It doesn't mean you can drink the hexane. It means that they're used to extract things that end up in the food chain. Well, this increases the availability of a lot of the aromatic molecules. And something like tuberose does not distill very easily because it's so waxy. So where you see absolutes, and we're going to talk about this next week actually, where you see this done more is in the perfume industry. And so what you have then is a solvent extract that's extracted with something toxic that is then removed, and it leaves behind the oil. Now, of course, you can't get 100% of it out, and so there's parts per million that can be left in that. But then when that particular absolute is then blended into a perfume blend, it may become parts per billion or even less. So this is not something that is highly toxic when it is finally done, but at the same time, you want to keep in mind that these are for external purposes. And we make a clear distinction in aromatherapy that you do not use absolutes for therapeutic purposes. They can have therapeutic purposes, especially if the absolute is pure, food grade, biocompatible, organic, and so forth. There are certain products that can be consumed safely. Another is CO2, and I believe there's an image of that coming up. If you go to 35, what you can see here is also solvent extraction, where they put the flowers down in these tanks. And this is steam distillation of rose petals, but if you go to 36, you see a steam distillation of rose petals, but what you see is that they're layered so the rose petals don't all clump together. So these are all different distillation methods. And then if you come to 37, this is a carbon dioxide extracting method that uses pressurized gas. And this is also a type of absolute, and these absolutes are completely non-toxic, because the pressurized gas forces the essential oil out, and then when the oil has come out, they basically release the pressure, and it just turns from a liquid into a gas again. So this is a very interesting high-tech method. Now, last couple of slides here, 38, you'll see a very high-tech distillation method that's used to extract specific compounds from essential oils. Now, keep in mind that the essential oil industry is not primarily aromatherapy. The primary uses of essential oils in industry are extracting essential oils to get specific compounds that go into the food and flavoring and fragrancing and perfumery industries. Those industries are not interested in organic, artisan, small-scale, pure essential oils. They're interested in farnesene to put in soap. They're interested in eucalyptol to put in Vicks VapoRub. Okay, that's where the majority of essential oils are still used. And so this shows an operation in India that takes an essential oil, and when I was there, The whole neighborhood smelled like beautiful ylang ylang. Why? Because they were distilling ylang ylang oil to get the farnesene molecule that makes ylang ylang smell like ylang ylang out to sell to soap makers. All right, last couple of slides, number 39. What is our most widespread form of distillation? Here it is. Distillation of petroleum into all kinds of different products. I'm just adding this so that you have a sense that distillation is not just essential oils. So final slide here, crude oil goes into the furnace. It comes out at all these different temperatures and is distilled into gas, gasoline, kerosene, diesel, fuel oil, lubricating wax, asphalt, all these different kinds of things. All right, I hope you enjoyed that. Go ahead and close that file. Now, I would like to spend a few minutes here talking about essential oils as prana and chi and the five elements, because now you have a good idea of all of those elements and how they got there from the environment and the sun and the moon. And so if you open now the file called Oils According to Ayurveda and TCM, if you would please open that. And we can just go through this. Now, this is the beginning of an ongoing exercise we're going to be practicing every module, which is to learn groups of oils according to different elemental classifications, which then will tell us a lot of information very quickly. So,
excuse me, David.
Yes,
did you
please.
Mean oils according to prana, that file?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. I have a different title. My title on this file says Oils According to Ayurveda and TCM, but then when I open it up, I'm sorry, the correct title, which is on the course page, Oils According to Prana. Yes, I'm sorry. Okay, so let's take a moment. Open that file. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Now what we're going to do is just go through this. And we're going to talk about what it means to classify the oils according to prana and chi and these different terms from Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine. And this is a review for those of you who are in the 7-week course, introduction to those of you who are not, but there's also new material here as well. Prana, what is prana? Life force. Chi, synonymous. Now, the term chi has some dimensions to it that prana does not, and vice versa. So I'll give you a quick definition here before we unpack this. Qi in Chinese medicine is linked to a lot of very interesting concepts. It has multiple meanings. So the word qi is associated with clouds, and the pictogram for qi, the character for qi when it is written, means vapor rising to form clouds. Okay, and specifically, it's vapor rising from rice that is being cooked on a fire. So that means that qi has a component of fire, qi has a component of nutrition, qi has a component of plants, qi has a component of vapor. That means that our life force, qi, comes from our metabolic heat, from the food we eat, from the plant world, nutrition, and the essence of it that is extracted. It's a beautiful image. So if we take that idea of qi and we unpack it a bit further, we see that it's related to gases of all kinds. Well, what is aromatherapy? It's vaporous. And what we see also is that it's related to the weather and the atmosphere, and the weather and the atmosphere are all there in the essential oils also. And so what we see there is weather qi is in the plant qi. And that's in the qi of the essential oils. And qi also means smell and odor. So therefore, if we take that particular idea of qi, we can see that it's very directly related to aromatherapy. And aromatherapy is, in a certain way, administering the vaporous, aromatic dimension of plants for their therapeutic benefits. Now, if we look at the term prana, we also see life force. We also see breath. Specifically, qi is also linked to breath. Prana is linked to breath. Breath is linked to aromatherapy. Breath is the primary way that aromatherapy works. And so therefore, chi and prana are fundamental to aromatherapy, and the link is respiration. Prana also has some fascinating other translations, and one of the most important is intelligence. And I've introduced the idea that plants contain very old intelligence, and so therefore their prana, their life force, the life force of plants is old. Well, we can see a physical manifestation of it in a seed. At the end of its life cycle, every year, there's a seed. What's in the seed? DNA, genetics. That's a kind of prana or chi that is the information that is the end result of millions of generations of the plant that is now ready to go in the soil and be warmed by the sun and moistened by the water and nourished by the earth and influenced by the moon, and then it will sprout, and that genetic information is also what's in the oil. So prana as information and intelligence is in the oil, and very specifically the evolutionary intelligence and the immunological intelligence. All of that is in the essential oil when we distill it. Prana also means not just intelligence, but the flow of intelligence in the body, and that is why prana is specifically correlated with the nervous system. The brain is the center of prana. The nervous system is the center of prana. The nervous system is the vehicle, the channel of prana, strongly linked to breath. Now, if we take those ideas, let's go back and look at this file, correctly titled Oils According to Prana and Qi, and we break it down, life force, nerve current, respiration, and immune power. And so what we see then is we can classify oils according to prana and qi that are most energizing to the mind and the brain. What oils are most energizing to the mind and the brain? These are the ones that I vote for. And this is an ongoing process of translating this, and I welcome everybody to participate in bringing essential oils into the classical language and systems. Major oils I vote for, rosemary. Why? Because lots of scientific evidence now is showing that it actually strengthens the brain and gives us memory. Laurel, hot, spicy, cinnamon kind of fragrance, uplifting, mentally stimulating. Tulsi strengthens the brain. Tulsi herb strengthens the brain, strengthens the flow of the prana. Another aspect of prana and qi is our immune system. So what are some of the oils that we're going to cover when we talk about immune enhancement? We're going to talk about frankincense. That's a major one. We're going to talk about, again, tulsi, holy basil. Then, so many oils are related to the qi and prana of our respiratory system, but the major ones I would vote for, eucalyptus, rich in air element, conifers, rich in air element, again, holy basil. And then another very important aspect of prana and qi is the immune power to kill the pathogens, antimicrobials. Tea tree, oregano, ravensar, tulsi, those would be the ones I would vote for. So if we continue on, what we see here is ojas. This is a term from Ayurvedic medicine. This is the nutrient immunological energy of the body. Now, don't worry if this is a new, the first time you're hearing this. This is just the language that I'm unpacking, introducing at the beginning. All of these things will be fully described and translated as we go along. And so even if you have a background in Ayurveda, you're going to get some new ideas about what this information could be in terms of seeing it through the lens of essential oils. So ojas basically means like the most concentrated nutrient essence in our body that supports our immunity. Well, what is that in the plant world? How about the heartwood oils? The most concentrated oil inside a sandalwood tree, agarwood tree, or cedarwood tree. That took 100 years to concentrate that oil into the heartwood. It is immunological in nature. That's why I vote for those oils. Now, how about ojas at a different level and jing? Now, jing is from Chinese medicine. Ojas is from Ayurveda. Nutrient and reproductive essences and soma, lunar nectar. Okay, so all of these concepts, soma, lunar nectar, jing, reproductive essence, ojas, the refined nutrient essence that's also part of our reproductive power. We find those concepts most clearly in the sweet flowers. Rose, jasmine, ylang ylang, and champa could be said to be rich in lunar nectar, ojas, and jing. Don't worry if we're just going too quickly, because all of this is just a brief introduction. As we go through, scanning even faster now, we see the oils according to yang and agni, sunlight, and fire element. And so here we have the hot, spicy oils. These are the ones that will burn the skin. And we have those that are going to help support our digestive fire. And then we can classify the essential oils into the five elements. All the essential oils are related to space, especially if they're diffused, because they go into the space of the atmosphere and the space of our lungs. Some oils are very important for the respiratory system. Here's a good list. We're going to be unpacking this when we get into the first of the therapeutic modules. We have two modules dedicated to the respiratory system. We're going to be studying mostly air element oils because they're directly related to the lungs. All right, we're running out of time. I'm going to just let you read this and assimilate it as part of your deepening practices. Now, speaking of which, you have plenty of homework. I don't think I'm going to spend much time in the next class reviewing this because this is all just further reading on the same subject. If you would look at the course page, you will see that you also have a slideshow on ATARs, and you don't need me for this one because this one has titles with it. And so this is the distillation of a classical Indian perfume. And it's also a very important part of Ayurvedic medicine, used in marma therapy, acupressure therapy. You also have some files. Essential oil producing areas is another file, major essential oil producing areas in the world. That will tell you where a lot of oils come from. And there's also a file telling you about all the benefits of distilling these oils in these different locations. There's one file that I would like you to open here, and this is the method of contemplative aromatherapy. I'm giving it to you now because maybe some of you have some oils. Just read this through and think about it, and we're going to pick up on this next week. You'll notice at the end of the file that it gives a source for perfume strips. We will probably also offer them shortly. But this is a method of paying attention to everything I just told you. Everything I told you about what's in the oil, the sun and the moon and the air and the water and the earth and the intelligence and the prana and the chi, it's all there. It's not made up. It's real. Essential oils are the distilled immune system of the plant from a specific environment. This method of contemplative aromatherapy just outlines how to become aware of it at a sensory level. Relax for a few minutes. Pay attention to your breath. Pass the fragrance under the nose. Sample it for a moment. Observe the fragrance and the body sensations. Each time you do it, increase it in length a little bit. Don't overdo it. Just look for all the different layers of energies and elements that are in that oil. Okay? Now, I'm going to elaborate on this in the next few modules, because this is a very important aspect of what we're doing. Learning how to pay attention is going to develop our brains. It will strengthen our nervous system to pay attention to our breath, to pay attention to the world of fragrance. So this is more than just aromatherapy training. This is increasing our neurological intelligence. Okay, please open one last file here, and then we're done, and then we're going to open it up for our discussion. Deepening practices. This is elaborating a little bit more on contemplative aromatherapy. So if you don't have perfume strips, it's okay. Just do it with the open bottle. So what do you do? Just practice contemplative aromatherapy. Sample the oils mindfully. Become aware of the primary fragrance notes. Giving this to you in advance, start to study it, you can learn this easily, and then we're going to go further. Is the oil primarily earthy smelling, spicy smelling, floral, sweet, or coniferous? See if you can identify the primary fragrance notes. Then, explore the dimensions of the elements and energies that we talked about in this class. See if you can feel and smell the presence of sunlight and moonlight, earth, water, fire, air, and space, the intelligence of the plants, prana and the chi, the immunological powers. Then take it a step further. As you contemplate the various energies and elements in the oil, observe how they interact and affect the energies and elements in your body and mind. Next, don't stop with just essential oils and aromatherapy. Start noticing the world around you. Extend this practice to include other forms of aromatic plants, and then all plants. And then you can bring that to your diet and all the teas that you drink and all the foods that you eat. And you will start to perceive that sunlight and moonlight and earth, water, fire, air, and space and the intelligence of the plants and the ancient lineage of everything living around us is always present around us and inside of us all the time. And that's the deeper purpose in studying aromatherapy, is to begin to perceive that the universe and the world and the biosphere and all living beings around us are full of these energies and elements and intelligence. All right. So that is the end of Module 1. I hope you enjoyed it. You have some homework. And I will now open it up for discussion. Please send in your webcast questions. And if you would like to raise your hand, Colleen will tell you how. And we can have some questions and discussions for a few minutes before we sign off. Colleen, I'll turn
Wonderful.
It back to you.
Wonderful, David. Thank you so much. So just to let everyone know, if you're on the phone, press 1 on your telephone keypad to share with David and the rest of us. If you're on the webcast, please type directly into the box provided. We'll start directly with a question from Mabel. Following distillation and collection of the essential oils, are the oils then further purified, or does it go directly into a bottle for sale? And how is the therapeutic grade of essential oil different from other grades of essential oil?
Okay, two good questions. Now, the term therapeutic grade means nothing. That's a marketing term. There is no such grading system. Next week, I'm going to spend some time debunking myths about essential oils. That's one of them, is that there is such a thing as a therapeutic grade. There is no such thing as a therapeutic grade. There is only an essential oil. Now, there is a lot of quality. There are a lot of quality control issues with essential oils. An essential oil has a range of therapeutic applications. If you have an essential oil that has nothing else in it, then it will have a range of therapeutic functions that aren't affected in any way. However, as we'll learn next week, essential oils are adulterated widely, which is a good reason not to take them internally. They are adulterated with a lot of toxins, synthetic fragrances, stretched with all kinds of carrier oils. It's an ugly situation, and nobody is going to tell you that they do it at the level of business. Everybody's going to tell you, all I have is a purist. But when you start to learn about the industry, and you start to learn about how much is actually produced, and how much is actually on the market, it doesn't add up. And so a lot of things are added. Okay, so let's go to your first part of your question, and that is anything else done? Yes, several things are done. One, I just showed you on the slideshow, and that is that many times essential oils are then fractionated. In other words, they're distilled again to extract certain compounds. Sometimes those isolated compounds end up getting mixed back into essential oils to stretch them out. That's an adulteration. Okay, that happens. Many times it's not from the extracted essential oil, it's from synthetic molecules. Why would somebody add something back in that's taken out? Well, because if it's synthetic, okay, if you have synthetic farnesene, for example, you want to pour it into your ylang ylang oil to stretch it, and nobody will be able to tell unless you have complex analytical equipment. That's another big topic for next week. How do you know? These things are important before we get started because so many people are being poisoned by essential oils. We have to really be careful. This is a very corrupt industry. We have to know what we're working with. So, what else is in there? Well, mostly carrier oils, all right? Different kinds of things to stretch things out. And we're going to talk about some things next week about how can you identify at home, some simple tests you can do, all right? Are other things done? That's the answer. Mostly things are taken out for other purposes or things are put in as adulterants. But if you know the distiller, you go and you work with them, they're part of like your extended, you know, network of friends and family, you've seen the oil coming out of the still, you know when they're harvesting, you know the oil, you've had it tested, you've got all the certificates, you can feel pretty confident that all that's there is an oil. Now, is that therapeutic grade? Yes. That means that it doesn't have any contaminants. But the problem is that all kinds of contaminated oils are called therapeutic grade. All right, that's the problem. Very complicated. So we'll unpack that more, but the short answer is, yes, things are taken out, things are put in. That's not what you want. You want the oil straight from the still. When you get the oil straight from the still, it's highly therapeutic as long as you use it right. Every essential oil has a high risk of adverse reactions. It is the most concentrated form of botanical medicine. That's the danger. People do not have any perspective on this, because they're being told that essential oils are simple and safe for everybody, and if the oil is pure, it will not hurt you. That's another myth. People are being told, if it's pure, it won't hurt you. On the contrary, if it's pure, there's a very high risk, because an essential oil is very concentrated, and it can burn you. And so as I stated at the beginning of this course, one of my primary objectives is to make sure everybody is safe in this extremely concentrated level of using herbal medicine. Okay, let's do another one, Colleen.
Yes, we have Gaia on the line. Go ahead, you have the mic, Gaia.
Thanks, hi. In the slideshow, the botany slideshow, after the sunflower on slide 11 and 12, could you please identify what these two trees are? There, you were talking about the different seasons. There's a beautiful pink flowered tree, and then after that, a golden yellow. I'm not sure what they are.
The flowers are some type of fruit tree somewhere. I don't know. Maybe they're almond trees in the Central Valley of California. I don't know. But that wasn't the point of plant identification. The point was seasons. The golden trees are aspen trees in Colorado. I know that one.
They're beautiful.
Aspen trees in the fall. Yes, so good. Okay. Let's do another one from the webcast. Or actually,
okay.
Colleen, if there's somebody on the phone, let's take that first, because I am going to answer all the webcast questions by posting another file next week. So whatever webcast questions are not answered will be answered. But if there's somebody on the phone, let's take that first.
David, thank you so much. Here we go. We have Ela on the line. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good evening, David.
Hi.
Hi, good to hear you again.
Likewise, thank
I have a couple of questions regarding dispersion rates. I was thinking of the night blooming jasmine and the dispersion rate being 10 feet, but I was also thinking of the elements present in the night air, which is a lot of dampness and water element. So then I'm wondering, does the dispersion rate of specific flowers also are dependent upon the element present in the environment at that time? So a neroli, which is a dry sunlight type of dispersion, you know, what happens, will it have less of dispersion on rate on damp days when there is less of the bright sunlight and dryness?
An excellent question, because this shows that you have both a scientific mind and the mind of an Ayurvedic Rishi who is looking at the world as through the lens of the elements. But all of these things are also what modern science studies. And you are absolutely correct that the humidity of the atmosphere, the water element, certainly influences the diffusivity rate, and so does the wind. And so if it's raining out, the diffusivity rate will be very low. So excellent question. And I would suggest that you simply take that and turn it into a little exercise where you are observing the qualities of the environment, day by day, night by night, and the more you become sensitive to that, then those kinds of things will be immediately accessible to your own sensory awareness. But yes, you are absolutely correct that the environmental factors all play a role in what the plant is doing, what the flower is doing, and what the essential oil will end up being. Okay, so thank you. Do we have one more call? And then I think we're going to have to quit.
David, there's no other callers at the moment.
Okay, then why don't we just wind it up for today. Everybody who submitted your webcast questions, please don't worry, because I am going to answer them. I will answer them by posting a file. So we are at the end of Module 1, at the beginning of our six-month journey. And so thank you very much. I want to mention one thing here before I sign off and we move to the breakout groups. And that is that next week, Sarah and I are going to be on a plane on our way to the East Coast and to Iceland, where we are going to be visiting the late summer flowers, and I will be teaching a program in Reykjavik. And next week's class will be pre-recorded. But that will be the only class in this series. Everything else will be live. I will be calling in from Iceland, which will be midnight my time. And we will have interaction. All the other classes will be live, but I will be on a plane next week. And I want to mention that. And so now we move to the breakout groups, and I would like to stress the importance of the breakout groups as a resource for you. The breakout groups are an excellent opportunity to interact with other students, and a great learning opportunity, and also it's a great opportunity for you to teach. I know that a lot of people in this course already know a lot about the subject and already have a lot of experience. And I'm sure that people have questions, and it's a great opportunity to discuss things. It's a great opportunity to share resources and experience and knowledge. So I always end every module with a list of questions, and these are things to get you started with a little bit of discussion on the breakout group. So first question. Number one, what is the most important teaching that you took away from this module? That's a good topic to discuss. What's the most important thing you learned today? Number two, what did you find most personally meaningful? All right, a slightly different way of asking that. Number three, which of the deepening practices appeals to you most and why? Well, we haven't actually started doing the deepening practices yet, and so next week there will be more, and as we go week by week, this question will become more relevant. And same with number four, which is basically what are your experiences with the deepening practices. So if you're already familiar with the idea of the contemplative aromatherapy, maybe you were in the Ayurvedic aromatherapy course where we did that, maybe you would like to share some of your experiences with people of what it was like to do that. And then as we go, the question will come, how are you incorporating these teachings into your life? And again, if you were in the Ayurvedic aromatherapy course, maybe you have some things to say now several months later about how that particular aromatherapy course has become integrated into your life. And so with that, I will say thank you again to everybody for your interest in this very important and very complex subject, for your investment of time, energy, and money to be here. I very much appreciate it. And Colleen, thank you so much. It's always great when you're there hosting the call. And with that, I will say good night, and I'll talk to you by recording next week, and then I'll be back live in 2 weeks. And so I'll say good night to everybody and sign off.